That was you too.
Got the blue man there. We're live. Call the House Committee on Health Care to order for this lovely June 10th. And thank you guys for coming to visit with us today. I'm sorry we're a little confused. We're going to meet from 1 to 2 to deal with two reports and then come back again at 4. 4 to 5 to deal with two more. So, Madam Administrator, would you call the first witness, please?
Inner Community Health Network, Kelly Kaiser, CEO.
Thank you. Hello.
Thank you so much for coming. Please begin by introducing yourself.
So my name is Kelly Kaiser, and I have the opportunity to serve as the CEO of Inner Community Health Network Coordinated Care Organization. I have Kim Whitley with me as our Chief Operating Officer, and I just want to point out we have Frank Moore with Linn County and Mitch Anderson with Benton County, part of our stakeholder group here today, so I wanted to recognize them. Chairman Greenlick and members of the committee, thank you for inviting me here today to discuss the IHN-CCO, as we like to call it. We're in Linn, Benton, and Lincoln counties, so right in the middle of the state from the coast to the Cascades. Again, I wanted to clarify that we're here speaking on behalf of all of our stakeholders, and I'm proud to say that one of our greatest achievements of our CCO is the collaboration amongst our community and the broad-ranging engagement and trust that we've built over the last 3 years with our community stakeholders. So I think that's shown today with who's here with us today. IHN-CCO was formed in 2012 by local, public, private, and nonprofit partners to unify health services and systems for Oregon Health Plan members, the Medicaid members, in Benton, Lincoln, and Linn counties. As IHN-CCO, we are committed to improving the health of our communities while lowering or containing the cost of care. And we're going to accomplish this through coordinating health initiatives, seeking efficiencies through blending of services and infrastructure, and engaging all stakeholders to increase the quality, reliability, and availability of care. We received our certification in August of 2012. We currently serve more than 60,000 Oregon Health Plan members. Our partnership include Benton County, Lincoln County, Linn County governments, local health care providers, federally qualified health centers, Capital Dental Care, Advantage Dental, and Willamette Dental, the Corvallis Clinic, the Oregon Cascades West Council of Governments, Quality Care Associates, which is a local independent practice association, Samaritan Health Plan, Samaritan Health Services, and Samaritan Mental Health. Our governing board is comprised of the president of our local health system, two independent doctors, a mental health doctor. We have two county commissioners, one county administrative officer, a hospital administrator, three county members, and the chair of our community advisory council. We host public meetings. We host three annual public meetings, one per county. At these meetings, three of the IHN board members give short presentations before opening the floor for questions. We've been working with the Linn, Benton, Lincoln Health Equity Alliance to gather ideas on how to make these meetings more accessible and encouraging of attendance by the HP membership. Some of the suggested changes have already been implemented and others may be tried out over time. These meetings are typically well attended and robust discussions take place between the representative board members and the local community. Our values, stakeholder participation in design and delivery of healthcare is key. A focus on prevention, early intervention, and self-care. Promotion of family health as a means of improving readiness to learn and adoption of lifelong healthy lifestyles. We want to maximize utilization of existing resources, so make sure we don't reinvent the wheel where we don't need to. Achieve positive health outcomes through evidence-based health programs. Make sure that we are delivering services that are culturally sensitive. We want to coordinate care using the patient-centered primary care home model as our foundation. We want to maintain continuity of care for patients through integration of services, and we want to utilize performance and outcome data to guide and design development of our healthcare delivery systems as we progress. Really strengthening community infrastructure to promote healthy neighborhoods. That's our value. We have a community advisory council. Our community advisory council is intended to support significant community and member involvement and input into the operations and mission of the IHN-CCO. Membership includes local citizens and representatives from county government, with a majority representation on the council by IHN-CCO members or their representatives. The Community Advisory Council coordinator is under contract with the Oregon West Council, Cascades Council of Governments, and funded by IHN-CCO, Benton County, Lincoln County, and Linn County. Again, back to our collaboration to make sure that Everybody's involved in what we're doing, and everybody has a piece of the puzzle so that we're all working together. The Regional Community Advisory Council consists of 19 representatives, 6 per county, plus the chair, and includes 12 IHN CCO consumer member representatives, 3 county staff, and 3 community members. In partnership with the CAC, each county has a local community advisory council to ensure communication between the regional and the local meetings. 3 representatives serve as elected liaisons, 1 per county, between the respective local committees and on the regional council. So really making sure, since we have 3 counties, we want to make sure that the local feel and flavor of each of those counties is represented at the county level, and those groups meet very regularly, and then at the regional level, all of that is brought together to create an IHN CCO approach. Some engagement efforts underway on the planning stages as it relates to engaging our OHP members in our Community Advisory Council. All of our Community Advisory Council meetings, regularly scheduled, and the local ones are all open to the public. The Lynn Local Advisory Committee, hosted 2 community conversations with OHP members. The initiative, leadership, and planning for these events was led by a Lynn Local Advisory Committee member who also serves on the Lynn-Benton-Lincoln Health Equity Alliance Coordinator. And the purpose of the conversation was to create a forum for Oregon Health Plan members to share their healthcare experiences and perspectives on, in quotes, what is working and what isn't working in the healthcare system, and to voice what is important to them. The outcome of those meetings was shared with the CAC at their May meeting and will be further discussed at local meetings this summer. The CAC coordinator has a meeting scheduled with the executive director of the Oregon Council on Developmental Disabilities to explore resources and training opportunities for improving. We want to make sure that our meeting accessibility is there, as well as the outreach to a broader population of OHP members. The CAC and local committees have adopted an issue breach form, which has the potential to allow individual and committee level concerns and issues to come forward to the Community Advisory Council and be discussed from the healthcare system perspective. We also have what's called our Regional Planning Council. This is a standing work group focused on planning and coordinating the local system of health services and supports for the IHN CCO region of Lynn-Benton and Lincoln. The Regional Planning Council serves to guide the development of a regional system of health care firmly grounded in a philosophy of coordinated, patient-centered, and locally delivered health care. The Regional Planning Committee develops tools and strategies to transform and integrate the system of care, recommends funding needed for transformational activities, and assures cross-system coordination and care transitions, and sponsors an effective quality improvement process to drive positive system change. This committee reports directly to the Board of Directors. We also have the Delivery System Transformation Committee. The goal of this committee is to build on current resources and partnerships within the 3 county regions to outline the process and strategies to support transformation of the delivery system. To support, sustain, and spread transformation that supports the patient-centered primary care home as the foundation of our CCO. To welcome innovative ideas, plan, and transparently implement collaborative strategies that align with the CCO goals and described outcomes to pursue the triple aim. This is really a grassroots effort that includes anybody who can have an impact on the care of our patients, so it's mostly provider-driven. We have some initiatives going with the local school-based health centers. We are involved in both a school-based health center grant and a school-based health center pilot. We've been very involved in the Lynn-Benton Lincoln Early Learning Hub. IHN CCO was instrumental in bringing together the Lynn-Benton Lincoln Early Learning Hub. We were part of the backbone support group, helping from an administrative and financial perspective. The Lynn-Benton Early Learning Hub has 3 main focus groups, of which IHN CCO has representation on all 3. The 3 groups are the Early Childhood Coordinating Council, a Data and Evaluation Group, and Healthcare Integration Committee. Our approaches to transformation, our fundamental approach to transformation, is one of the collective impact model, which focuses on collaboration. Valuing diverse membership and ideas, recognizing that each member has expertise, having a common purpose. Members must trust one another, and trust allows members to share the decision-making and responsibility. This is really how we've started. There's 5 conditions to the collective impact model and its success: having a common agenda, shared measurement, mutually reinforcing activities, and continuous communication with that backbone support. We as the IHN CCO have taken on the role of the backbone support, and we see our piece in this puzzle as guiding the vision and strategy, support-aligned activities, establishing shared measurements, building public will, and advancing policy and mobilizing funding. We're really following the 4 phases to population health maturity. They'll start with the pilot, the care program development, physician-driven services, and true patient engagement. I think that the other piece would be around, we see this picture that you have in front of you. I think we have our member in the middle, And that's really important to us, to make sure the member is always in the middle, both visually and actually. So that's really very important to us. We have a number of efforts underway to integrate physical, oral, and behavioral health, including numerous pilots and efforts to address the 8 elements of transformation, as well as the health impact areas identified by our Community Advisory Council and their Community Health Improvement Plan. And I believe you have attached kind of a grid that shows the 8 elements of transformation and the 4 areas identified by our Community Advisory Council and our Community Health Improvement Plan. And then across the top are our pilots and how they impact those areas. And I have more information on those if that would be of value. But that's really how we've made sure that our focus is there and that we're all in the same area on that. One of our pilots focused on mental health literacy, and specific goals and outcomes of this pilot involve awareness, which is really a key piece. And then a lot of collaboration between all the stakeholders, especially as it relates to mental health first aid, was crucial in our development as we moved on. We also use flexible services as one of our tools in our toolbox, a key piece of transformation. Flexible services are health-related, non-state planned services intended to improve care delivery and enrollee health. Flexible services are cost-effective alternatives to traditional services that are consistent with the member's treatment plan as developed by the member's primary care team and documented in the member's medical record. Flexible services are unable to be reported in the conventional manner using CPT or HCPCS codes, and are likely to effectively treat or prevent the physical, dental, or mental health condition documented in the member's health or clinical record. We have some examples. Linus Pauling cooking classes offered to children and families who are at risk of obesity, currently have a high BMI. The classes are offered in the pediatric clinic and are geared toward teaching children and their parents about healthy eating. Families who have engaged in this program report an increase in healthy eating. We've also provided many gym memberships and pool passes to individuals who would benefit from an increase in physical activity for a variety of health reasons. And we just sponsored iChin children's registration fees to participate in the Spring Roll in Corvallis, which is an all-day bicycle event that encouraged safe bike riding for the health and emotional wellness of youth. I have a real-life example to share with you today. We have a 64-year-old member with diabetes, peripheral neuropathy, morbid obesity, and spinal stenosis received a swim pass and as part of the flexible benefit. The member was unable to walk more than 3 painful steps, which impeded her ability to exercise, lose weight, or leave the house. Being provided a swim pass has enabled her to lose weight, get out of the house, and go, I should say, shopping without being in so much pain. She states she is happier and excited to be able to get out of her house, walk around with less pain, to have the ability to go shopping, exercise, and lose weight. She states she is looking forward to continuing swimming and improving her weight loss and mobility. Some of the quality measures that we focused on in order to improve the outcomes are the screening, brief, intervention, and referral for treatment. We've worked with the EMR of our largest provider group to build an order set within their EMR. This improved code capture, collaboration with the primary care psychologist to standardize the screening within the patient-centered primary care home, has allowed us to create that collaboration and include the clinical billing side of it so that it streamlines the workflow. Ongoing, we'll have future pilots related to the screening, brief intervention, and referral to treatment, and alternative payment methodologies is our plan. We've had a focus on ED utilization. With the addition of the expansion population and the additional utilization faced by the emergency departments in our area was huge. An ED utilization task force was created with all hospitals in our region, and this group includes CCO representatives, emergency department providers, primary care providers, care coordinators, and the goal is to enhance outreach and education to those members using EDs with the hope of redirecting as appropriate. Also around the developmental screening piece, conversations with our large provider group regarding in their EMR again for developmental screening, education with providers regarding codes to be utilized, in collaboration with other groups such as the Lynn Benton Lincoln Early Learning Hub to see where else developmental screenings may be provided and how that information can flow back to the patient-centered primary care home. So that's a quick high-level summary of all of the pieces that we have, or some of the pieces, been working on, and I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you. So, Katie Geyer?
I have a few questions, and I know we only have about 7 minutes, so stop me when you want. I wanted to just say a couple things. One is, first of all...
We have a little more than that.
Oh, I thought it was half an hour per CCO? Okay.
132.
Okay. Well, I wanted to, first of all, compliment you on a couple things, your connections with the Early Learning Hub, your flexible services, and how you're doing that and what you're focusing on with that, your quality measures, particularly the ESPERT and the developmental screening. But I'm curious, with the focus on ESPERT as one of your quality measures, when I looked at the March minutes, which are the last minutes that you have for your board meeting, I saw the pie chart of utilization in January, and it had 62.9% focused on physical health, and then the next in level was pharmacy services, and then administration, and then reserves, and then 5.5% for dental health, and 5.2% for mental health. I'm not sure how you're characterizing that, but that seems shockingly low to me. And I know including behavioral health and mental health is a challenge, and that is happening, as is integrating dental health. But I'm curious if you could speak to that a little bit more.
So I think a lot of the pieces related, a lot of the integration are under the physical health part, because they're coming through the patient-centered primary care, medical home, and that method. That pie chart is really one around funding as opposed to utilization, so it probably should be clarified in the notes in terms of how the dollars flow through in the contracts that we have. But I wouldn't say that it's a representation of the work that's happening related especially to behavioral health and mental health integration. A lot of that falls within transformation, which isn't on there, as well as in the physical health piece, where a lot of the A&D stuff is also in the physical health piece. So that piece is a bit inflated in terms of just being physical health.
That's very helpful, thank you. And you didn't talk a lot about payment reform, but I'm imagining you're still probably in transition with that, and maybe your behavioral people in the primary care center, patient-centered primary care homes, are being classified as physical health.
It's coming under the transformation. We have an alternative payment methodology, actually, pilot that's going on, and it's live with three clinics around creating different ways of paying for those services of the integration of mental health, and that's a key piece of that, and that is in place.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit more about what you're really doing in the transformation component?
In the transformation what?
Component. I mean, what are you really doing to change? These are all nice words.
Yes.
Admire
that's a great
them.
Point.
But so, what are you really doing to change the way you deliver healthcare in those areas?
So we have a whole transformation department we've created within the CCO that has a manager and a staff of 7 people, and their whole job is to work on transformation and not be in the middle of operations, so that they have that ability to be more creative and open-minded. And they're really focused on this. And so of all these pilots up here, we have many, many documents that support all these pilots and regular meetings and all of those pieces, and we have a quantitative analysis that goes through and evaluates each of the pilots as they work through their progress to make sure they're meeting our goals. Are they transformational? Do they meet, are they replicable in terms of meeting our goals as it relates to the delivery system transformation? There's very specific requirements in terms of being transformational, and then we continue to monitor those, report back to that committee, as well as the regional planning committee, as well as the board. So I would say we have a lot of energy on that and a lot of detail in all of these pilots to see how they're working or not working.
It's cold.
Okay. If I could just follow up. So the question I have, and I appreciate all those points, I'm trying to understand the relationship between the pilots and the core services that you're providing to all. So are they part of the core services? Or, I mean, there's a lot of pilots. I'm worried about the energy and effort it takes to do that.
Sure. The core services are really kind of over here, and we're making sure we're taking care of everybody based on our contract and all of our requirements. At the same time, we have the transformation elements kind of happening over here and working on integrating as much as we can into how it works into fitting into operations, because we can be very creative with an alternative payment methodology over here, but I can't encounter that data to the state based on my contract and where I am today because there's no code for it. So we're making sure we're transformative and doing what we need to do over here and setting that stage to make it sustainable moving forward, and then we'll figure out how to switch it into operations and have, you know, we'll do that as it makes sense. Mm-hmm. I think that's around our phases to population health maturity. We're still
you aren't being
pilot.
Paid based on those codes. You're being paid on a capitation basis.
That is true. Mm-hmm. But we still have to submit the data to the Oregon Health
Authority. You submit claims, but, I mean, is what was stopping you, if you don't have a number for something, you can't do it?
Nope, we're doing it. We're just doing it over here and making sure that it works and it meets the need we want, and then we'll switch it over and do it on the more operational side.
I'm having trouble understanding that.
I am too.
I mean, it seems to me having transformation separate from operations is exactly the opposite of what you need. You want to have transformation in operations, seems to me, right?
And then
I mean, otherwise there's a bunch of stuff over here, and we don't have to worry about that because here's where we really do our work.
Yeah, and it's not quite that separate. I think it is integrated and making sure that it works, but we also want to make sure that we're able to be a little more creative over here in doing what we want to do to transform and change. And then if it works, then we operationalize it. if it doesn't work, we don't want to put it over here and have it fail, because that would not get us anywhere. So that's the pilot phase of trying to work through the pieces.
Can you give us a couple examples of that?
So, can I have my partner in crime help
sure.
me talk? All right.
Okay. So I chair.
Introduce yourself, please.
Sure. Kim Whitley with iGenCCO. I'm the chief operating officer, and I also serve as the chair of our delivery systems transformation committee, which is, as Kelly stated, a committee of clinical individuals who have the ability to change the healthcare delivery system from across our three-county system. And they come together every 2 weeks to discuss how to transform at that clinical level. So by clinical, I mean mental health providers, long-term care, Department of Human Services,
oral health,
A&D. I mean, any provide EMS, the emergency medical services are there. All of those types of individuals are coming together to say, how can we look at this differently? And the four phases to population health have you start at a pilot level, because a lot of this involves culture change for those providers that are providing care, about thinking about the world differently, thinking about the person as a whole person, not just in the silo in which they currently work. And so individuals from across the community are allowed to bring pilot ideas to us. So for instance, one of these ideas is for to increase the mental health services in the area, to have psychiatrists do chart reviews for primary care homes upon request for individuals that they're struggling to meet the needs of somebody with let's say they're having they've been on a lot of mental health drugs and the doctor just doesn't know where to go with that. So we have a pilot where a psychiatrist will review the charts of these individuals and give feedback back to the primary care provider, and then will make themselves available for a visit with that patient with the primary care provider if the doctor feels that just the chart review is not enough. And so that's a pilot that we're doing within primary care homes. And why it's a pilot and not, it's not that it's not operational, it is, but sometimes there's too many pieces for us to get that on the ground going very quickly if we try to do it through our current operational processes. So we do it outside of the current operational process so we can get to market really fast with this pilot and start it up without having to worry about, you know, is the EMR set up? Does the billing team know how to get that information? Will the provider be paid? Because everybody gets really worried about those details. And by doing it outside of the process, by outside, it's monitored, you know, by the process, but it's not constrained by all the usual processes we put things through. And so it allows everybody to get involved much quicker. And then as that's happening, operationally, we're looking at it. And I have a whole team of operational people who look at it to say, okay, this pilot looks like it's getting some ground. It's doing some really good work. The outcomes are looking good. We're probably going to spread this across the system, and so we got to think about how do we make this a standard.
Is there one that you've spread across the system?
One that we've spread across the system? Let me think. We have the psychiatric chart review is actually going up before the Delivery Systems Committee July 2nd to spread it across the system. So part of our process as collective impact is that the CCO is not is having the community make decisions on how things spread and how transformation happens. And so it has to go back before the Committee of Clinicians, and they will agree to that it gets spread, because it's going to cost some money to the CCO to do that. We're going to have to support that process. So we need to make sure we have the community support to do that.
Representative Kenny Geyer.
Thank you. And we've touched on a couple of different managing chronic diseases, mental health, obesity. I wonder if you can also talk about how you're screening and treating and deciding to treat or not treat HIV and Hep C, particularly with the high cost of Sovaldi and others. How are you making that decision? And these are some of these things are healthcare costs that might be borne down the line.
Sure.
You know, so I'm just curious about how you're approaching that.
So we're following, you know, we have a protocol for the, especially for Sovaldi and that, and what that looks like, and making sure that we align with the HERC and the, or as much as we can with the recommendations that are put out from there, and processing through that as necessary. We're fortunate in that our infectious disease doctors that are within the Regional Medical Center in Corvallis sit on our P&T committee. So we have a lot of insights that we can use their expertise to help us figure out the best approach clinically, and then we look at that financially as well. But we have a protocol set out there in terms of what the needs to happen to be eligible for those drugs, which is similar to what the HERC has put out. I don't have that in front of me right now, but we do look at that very carefully. We do not have a huge incidence of HIV in our population, mm-hmm. in our service area.
Okay. Maybe as a follow-up, because we didn't get this question to you ahead of time, if you could let me know
okay.
some of your numbers sure. in terms of how many are being screened, how many are being accepted for treatment, how many are being denied.
Sure.
Okay. How that treatment's going, that'd be great.
I was in Hayden, you get the last question.
Okay, just a couple really quick ones, and you can get back to me or not even answer them today if you want. I'd like to know the size of each of your pilot projects, meaning you have an N number, these 50 people, these 800 people, the time it takes from implementation to either the pilot project is successful or failed, the time it takes from success to full implementation. You've got 20 listed here. I think you've already answered that none of the 20 are fully implemented at this point. So.
We will get that to you for sure.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, yes. Can I ask one more? They don't even have to answer, but a question that I'm curious about that you are probably curious about. You're so passionate about the consumer advisory councils, and I noticed that one-third of your council, I think it's the council, not the full board, two out of six positions, both Lynn and Lincoln County, are vacant right now. I'm just curious about what the challenges are in. So there's no time to answer, but this is something I know you've tracked really carefully, and we want to make sure that we're getting.
Well, you've got a moment. Talk about your CAC.
Well, yeah, I'd like to. I mean, I think for us, we're really proud of the way we've developed our CAC. We have, and you'll probably hear this from other CCOs, but our three counties can be very different. You know, we have a very much more rural community on the coast. The Benton County tends to be, you know, a little more populous, and Lynn County is much bigger and broader. And so recognizing the differences and respecting those, we have a lot of energy around our local, what we call our local CAC. That report up to our regional. One of the things we're looking at doing is to be more diversified and have a broader group of OHP recipients to include on that is the outreach related to DHS and disability services and really working on expanding that panel. And we work really closely with the three county health administrators from the health departments in each of those counties to help us identify community members that they think would be interested in participating in this and meet that qualification, but it has been a struggle to get OHP members on to the council from the, you know, whether it's the, we do, you know, we pay for mileage and we pay for child care, but to the time commitment and the engagement and understanding of that, and we're really working on trying to.
But those are the vacant
that.
Positions.
Some of those are vacant positions.
Those are the ones that happen to be vacant. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Thank you very, very much for coming, and thank you for being so on time.
Oh.
We really appreciate it. Can you call the next speaker, please?
Jennifer Lind from Jackson Care Connect, which is the Jackson County CCO.
So far, the furthest away.
Yes.
So far.
Yeah, we're going to have further away than Jackson County.
Yeah, you know. So, I'm Jennifer Lind. Do you want me just to start in?
Please.
Okay. I'm Jennifer Lind. I'm the CEO of Jackson Care Connect, and I really appreciate the time, the invitation, and the time carved out of your schedule to come up and share some of our stories with you. It's been a fast and furious and fascinating journey so far, so it's fun to share that. I want to start with just a little bit of a story about Jackson Care Connect's history, because short though it is, I think it's critical to our stage of evolution and where we're at right now. So about 3 years ago when CCOs were created, Jackson Care Connect did not exist at all. Care Oregon had some membership down in Southern Oregon and wasn't sure if it would get engaged with a CCO down there. It did a tour and spoke with quite a few providers down in our region at the time that this legislation was going through, and heard loud and clear from providers that they wanted a nonprofit CCO down in the Rogue Valley, and they wanted Care Oregon to be directly engaged and help them facilitate and start that. And so that is the point at which the idea of Jackson Care Connect came into being. 3 years ago, it was stood up. We are a wholly owned CCO of Care Oregon, but we have an independent and local board of stakeholders, of which Care Oregon sits on our board and has exactly one vote, and has not really held special powers aside. So we are wholly owned and have a very tight relationship with them, but also a very independent organization. We are the only nonprofit CCO, as I mentioned before, down there. We have about 30,000 members. It fluctuates based on enrollment and the day that you look from the state.
But we're right around 30,000 right now, and that's in the state and the county of Jackson alone. We're one of three CCOs in our two-county region down there. And that number of 30,000 represents about a 50% growth from last year. So a significant challenge, I would say, to us personally as a CCO, but largely to our entire provider network to accommodate that 50% growth. So I started my job 3 years ago with a car and a cell phone, as I always like to say, and we now have an office down based in Medford, a staff of about 15. We're quite lean, but very strong. I'm lucky to have the team that I do, and have taken the time of 2.5 years to really do a broad education with our board, our providers, and our staff, and are poised now to really do a lot of exciting work. So I think the history is important because it's easy to think that CCOs have been around now for a whopping 3 years and have problems solved. And, you know, it wasn't long ago that I was driving up and down in my car running up gas bills. It's good to remember. We have a local board, as I said, and the board has been a very productive group of people that are developing new and meaningful relationships for us. And I cannot overstate how critical that is, and that's where the real transformation for us is happening, is in relationships. Our board is a beautiful example of that. I have on my board many of the competing organizations in our county. It's a pretty small county, and competition can at times be fierce. We're also quite small, and people are quite good at collaborating. So we have kind of these interesting and long-standing relationships down in Southern Oregon. I have both of the hospitals on my board, high-level administration. I have both of the FQHC clinics represented on my board. I have both of our very strong addiction service providers represented on our board. I have our county health and human services. We have our regional DHS represented on the board. Numerous others I'm sure that I'll forget. And in addition, two members that I really want to call out. We have direct consumers sitting on our board as well. And as you can imagine, the experience of, one, getting people to understand what a CCO is, two, the education across that broad range of experience about what Medicaid financing, Medicaid operations, and Medicaid goals are like, has been really challenging. And it has been a journey of educating those people so that I can truly now hear a hospital CFO speak and sound very much like a health plan executive at times. And I can hear members understand what it means to run a clinic, and I myself have understood the operations of our providers in a way that I never had before. So that is a triad, the consumer, the provider, and the health plan that I think always operated in opposition to each other, and we have really started to collapse a lot of that opposition. That's where our transformation, I think, is coming from. Our CAC has 9 members. I would echo what you heard from Kelly. It can be challenging to really recruit and retain at that level, but we have done a good job, and I'm very proud of that. They do meaningful work for us. They have done listening sessions, so we have member meetings every month where they really bring members in, listen, pull out ideas or barriers that our members are experiencing, come back to me with policy recommendations, with specific requests for me to adjust and change. They have been very engaged in developing our community health improvement plan and prioritizing ways for us to invest as a CCO aligned with that plan. And of course, they're sitting on our board as direct members engaged in these high-level board discussions has completely changed the discussion that we have in our boardroom in a way that's very productive, I think. Just at a governance and structural level, we have risk-bearing partners. So Jackson Care Connect, as the CCO, does not really hold risk in this equation, except for a small amount. We delegate our risk for physical health over to Care Oregon. They manage our network there. On mental health, we delegate that over to our county partner. On
inpatient residential addictions treatment, we delegated over to Gobi. We have a transportation brokerage, and then we have four DCOs operating down there that we delegate accordingly. Those are Willamette, ODS, Capital, and Advantage. Our delivery system, what it looks like in Jackson County, is very diverse, very independent, very efficient, and high quality, I would say. On the medical side, for our 30,000 members, we contract with almost 60 primary care clinics. That's almost every single primary care clinic in our county. It means that we are unique, relatively unique around the state from the bits I've heard, in our ability to accommodate that 50% increase in membership that I referenced earlier. We've had access constraints and we have challenged the system, but we have not bumped up against the barriers and we've been able to accommodate them in a way that I feel relatively happy about. The challenge in having those 60 clinics means that in our top five clinic systems, we only have about 60% of our membership. So 40% of our membership is spread out across 40-some clinics, right? And that means when we're looking at the metrics, we are not talking to one clinic system or two clinic systems. We are talking to almost 60 clinics and trying to figure out on a population level how to change the way healthcare is delivered. And that takes time and is slow and is challenging. So that's the trade-off we give in really prioritizing access for our members in the way that we have. We're very proud to say and have worked really hard to increase the number of patient-centered primary care homes we have down there. Almost 70% of our members are in one now. And we are doing a lot of work on thinking about technical assistance, thinking about payment models, really beefing those up. I believe strongly in that model. On the mental health side, our provider system is primarily focused within the county. They are the primary provider. They are contracting and expanding out their network so that they have greater levels of specialty and greater capacity and access. And they're looking to do that both by specific levels of expertise and also by geography. So really expanding into some of the more rural areas in our county where mental health can be challenging to reach. You asked for questions about transformation. What are we doing? And I would say that transformation is not coming through, I think, in the stories being asked to told or being told around metrics, around alternative payment methodologies, around even some of the pilot programs. And we also have started numerous pilot programs. I think where transformation occurs is in the type of discourse that we have within community systems of medical providers and members about what quality means to us, where inefficiencies exist, and how we want to adapt and change them. A key piece for us, I shared at the beginning that we don't hold risk as a CCO. That means in the insurance world, we don't really have money flowing to us. That's an important piece to get. And we have put into place a very unique gain share agreement that we have with Care Oregon, whereby 75% of any surplus that they generate is directly returned to our CCO for that local board to think through how it reinvests in its community. That is new. That has never happened before in insurance in our community, where any kind of surplus has gone back into the system, and direct stakeholders have been part of deciding where that goes. I'm proud to say it has not been a grab for rates. We have been very deliberate in thinking about how to allocate any surplus we generate around transformation pilot projects, around systems level coordination, around the member experience, and some into providers. So what 3 years ago I thought might have become providers figuring out how to game a system and get dollars out has not happened in the slightest, and I'm extraordinarily proud of that. I think those kinds of conversations and discussions and relationships can never be undone, and that's what I think transformation really is here. I think that the specific projects and results that come out of that take a while to play out, it is not a fast thing to do. I agree with the idea of doing pilots because you can try things, you can try to fail faster and learn and make improvements. But this kind of large systems level transformation is hard to do. So some of the things that we have done and accomplished, we've started up some new clinic models that I'm really excited down there. One is focused on those who are chronically using opiates or pain prescriptions, and I would say that in our region, we are one of the highest prescribing regions in our state, and as you know, our state is one of the highest in the nation. We have a significant problem down there. We've tackled this problem in a couple of ways. It's resulted by reducing heavy usage by 10% in just 1 year. That is significant. And 85% of our members who are still using chronic opiates have a tapering plan in place with their provider. Our providers were not doing that before. This is new. This is behavior change in a big way. We've done it by providing technical assistance and really partnering with our providers instead of just putting in policies that tell them what they have to do. We have a policy. They know what they have to do. We've realized we have to help them do that. So we have behavioral health supports going into clinics, helping providers learn how to tell a patient of theirs on opiates, chronically using them, that they need to stop and how to start to reduce that. And those are hard and difficult conversations, and our providers and prescribers need a lot of help in doing that. We've also put into place a new model, a clinic model, where we actually will allow them to refer their patients over to this new clinic. It has many kinds of behavior therapy in them, behavior, physical therapy. It's really teaching people how to deal with chronic pain. It's not letting our providers dump these challenging patients. They still have to be the primary care, but it's offering them those kind of supports for their patients as well. We also have a new clinic in place that provides a primary care home to those members of ours that have very severe addiction or mental health diagnoses. These are people who are who have traditionally fallen through the cracks and have never had primary homes, and is an extraordinary collaboration between both CCOs down in Jackson County, Jackson County Mental Health, and both of our addiction providers, and one of our QHCs. Even though we have co-location, we are all collaboratively funding, supporting, meeting weekly to figure out how best to support this operationally and at a systems level. We are finding it is really hard to do. It is hard to do on the ground, and we are learning so much from that about how to build up medical infrastructure within our addiction service providers and on the flip side. And then we have invested a significant amount into health information technology. And we have our local information exchange among hospitals and providers and CCOs, and I'm proud of that. Even more exciting, though, I think, is some of the work we've done on the behavioral health side so that they have similar infrastructure that can support their integration efforts. So we have purchased electronic health records for some of our addiction service providers. They've never had them. It's very hard to integrate when you've got paper charts this thick and you're trying to talk to a doctor who talks on a computer, right? So we've invested in those charts for them. We've invested in a new type of information exchange of sorts that will be solely for social service providers and behavioral health so that they can see where their clients are touching each other. They can begin to have a common intake form. We'll have demographic information. And this is important when you realize that a lot of our members are coming out of traumatic experiences. And every time they go to get help in our system, people are asking them questions about their traumatic experience and re-triggering these issues, right? Instead of us just being able to know who this person is, what has happened to them, and what our role in support might be. So that's another big part that I'm very excited about. And then we're starting to develop our own idea of what kind of care management teams we as a CCO need to create. We currently have a model that has a social worker paired with a RN, and they're doing intensive home visits. And home visits sometimes mean park benches, just to be clear on that. But we don't want to take over the role or duplicate the role that's already being done in primary care or hospital settings. So we're starting to map out what the whole of our community has for these kind of caseworkers, people doing home visits, how to get them to talk better, coordinate better, and then what gaps exist that we might need to staff up on our side rather than just starting with a staffing model. The other piece on the Early Learning Hub, we are one of the three CCOs that sit on the Executive Council for our Learning Hub and are supporting it, and I'm really excited to see where that goes. I think the home visiting piece is where a lot will land. Metrics, the good news there is we have a lot of room for improvement from our first experience. The first year out, as I said, those 60 clinics, it is really hard to get people to align in 60 different clinic systems around what a metric should be. And I think our performance showed that in the first year. We struggled with the metrics. Frankly, we at the CCO level struggled to understand what they were, that the state was still defining them, and then it was a lot of work to get them out to our provider network. This year, the year that just finished, 2014, I expect a marked improvement. I'm very proud of that. That comes from working very closely with our provider network. I mentioned earlier about that triangle and the relationships we're building. Historically, the plan and the provider were antagonistic to each other, and each told each other what they were going to do and hoped the other followed suit. And we've been trying to really position ourselves as partners with our providers. So we recognize we can't tell them what to do. They have many, many masters. They are chasing many metrics on their own. What we can do is understand which ones they're wanting to prioritize and then come in with supports to help them do that better. And they only have so much bandwidth. And in that strategy, we've really been able to see a shift across those 60 clinics. So I think we have significant improvements that have been made. We're still struggling on some of them. We have a lot of plans around how to get them better and are deploying people every day to do that. So I think that ends the main questions you had for me. I'd love to take additional.
Let's get some questions.
I have several, but why don't you put me last?
I'll start.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair Greenlink. Jennifer, how many CCOs do you think we need in the state of Oregon?
That's your starting question? Well, I don't know the answer to that. I don't know.
How would we determine it?
I also don't know the answer to that. I think, and part of what you're asking me is how many do we need in our region, I'm guessing, right? So I think there is real value to having them be community-based. If you'd asked me that question 3 years ago, I probably would have told you six across the state is all we should manage. I see incredible innovation coming out of the number that we have now because they're locally based. One of the challenges I have in operating in one of the most densely populated areas for CCOs is I believe in competition. I really think competition makes us smarter and faster, and in many times, it's the base of our entire business model, right? Where it's challenging in a Medicaid environment is when you're trying to move a transformation agenda through a Medicaid plan that is already one of the lowest payers, and then you further diffuse that Medicaid plan's impact in our provider network. So we have half of the Medicaid members in our county. Now, it is not untenable because we work well with our other CCOs, and when we work together, we're able to get much better progress and impact. So we're certainly making it work. It has the potential, though, to diffuse the impact of this agenda on transformation, and at times we can get triangulated between different plans. I didn't really answer your question.
Representative Kenny Geyer, I know you just can't stand it. So.
I was going to go at the end, but I actually wanted to build on something he just said. Because, first of all, for clarification, you're the only CCO in Jackson County?
There are three CCOs operating
three, okay,
in Jackson County.
That's why I...
Although that's a little false to okay. state. That's technically true, but one of them only has a small amount of Jackson County zip code. Uh-huh. There are two large CCOs operating in the county, and we each have about half of the Medicaid.
I'm guessing that's what your question is.
One reason.
So I'm not sure that's the most efficient system either, if that's what you're getting at, but I do think the regional focus is great, and I know that Jackson County and Klamath are the ones that really struggle with the opiate addiction issue more than others. And so you're being able to focus on that makes a lot of sense. You didn't talk about the Starting Strong, but it was in your report. And so I just want to highlight that as something that I'm glad that you're really looking at. I know that that's their prenatal care program. And I know that last time I saw statistics, I think 2 years ago, about how all of our health insurance plans, OHP and private, were meeting the needs of prenatal care in trying to get people in the first trimester. We were abysmally low as a state across the board. Yeah. So I'm glad that you're paying attention to that. I wanted to just mention on the quality measures that you're focused on, two of them are mental health related, the ESPERT and the follow-up to the mental health hospital admissions. That's great that you're focusing on that. We have a long way to go, and we have a House Bill 2023 that we just passed.
A question you have for her?
Well, I wanted to just get on record.
Other questions.
Yeah, I just want to get on record the kinds of things that you're focusing on that I'm glad that you're focusing on. The question that I had was, the CAC, the Consumer Advisory Council. I went online, and it mentions that there is one, but it doesn't say any, you know, and that there's 9 members, but it doesn't say who's on it, information at all about it. And one of the things, you know, just, you know, do you have the same kind of challenge that they do in are there a lot of vacancies? And just to reiterate our hope as a legislature that that be as transparent as possible, publicly announced so that people have a way to find out about meetings. You know, there's a requirement
that's
that the Republic.
We don't have vacancies right now, but we're always recruiting, and the recruitment of additional ones is challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a wonderful reminder. I will work on the website. Our CAC meetings are open, but we've not used the website very strongly to publicize those, and I can certainly work on that. The other piece that the CAC has highlighted is the issue of people living with obesity and diabetes as significant. Our members, we see it in our data as well. And so we've started additional programs with our YMCA, and the CAC has really spearheaded that. That is getting over 800 members in for monthly gym memberships. And they have to go 8 times a month in order to maintain that. I don't do that. So it's a real commitment.
Yeah.
And in addition, intensive programs we have to help with lifestyle behavior and some of the stories coming out of these people who've lost significant weight, who have avoided bypass surgery, entire families that are starting to change the way they act is amazing.
Can I ask you to shorten your answers? We'll try and get people to shorten the questions. Representative Lively.
So the question I have is the decision process. You talked about building the population health management team. So the process versus you, the CCO, doing it versus working with your team to create it.
Yeah, so and that's really critical because it would be easiest for us just to staff up and manage our issues, right? But that doesn't help at a community level. Better integrated and making sure the right people get the right kind. So that's what we're doing. We're pulling together all the other care coordinators that we can identify. It's amazing. They don't know each other. The hospital transition coordinators don't know the primary care nurse coordinators. We're pulling them together and starting to map out whose responsibility, whose job is it to do what, which populations do you target primarily, and then what gaps remain for us to start to fill.
Thank you.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Chair Greenlick. There's a certain set of population that the CCOs service in the state of Oregon, and although that has increased significantly, it's starting to stabilize. And so rather than the question of how many CCOs should Oregon have to take care of that, another perspective is your CCO at a point with its size that it can be sustainable and still meet all of the requirements, or is any CCO, is there a size that can meet all these requirements? Because they are, and having been involved with the development of transformation into DCOs, a smaller aspect of what you're doing with CCOs, there's an economy of scale.
Mm-hmm.
Have you hit that economy of scale where you're able to do, whether you have one patient or 30,000 patients, you have to do this huge, huge amount of work in order to hit your matrix and comply with that contract, that 5-year contract that you have. So the question is, Are you there, and is it sustainable?
And also, we're in the risk business, so we think of the size of risk pools as well as what you're calling out. So
correct.
I think that 30,000 is a bit, is about in the middle, you know. And part of our decision to really maintain a very close relationship with Care Oregon is frankly because of the efficiencies and economies of scales that we gain by being with a larger plan. So we can use some of the capacity they have in a much more efficient fashion than if I had to staff it up just for 30,000, if that answers your question.
Because you mentioned you don't currently take the risk, right? That's through your partnership.
Right, but we still have to do all of the regulatory requirements. I mean, there is a significant burden on the plan, whether or not we technically hold the risk, I would say. Your piece about the DCOs, I would just call out as, you know, we are just now ready to look at mental health integration, almost 3 years in, and oral health integration is a significant piece that we have not yet adequately tackled, and I think we have a lot of challenges from the state level on down to the delivery system. So,
I'm going to take the last question, which is almost a question, but not necessarily. I am worried about this innovation, in order to succeed in the future, it's not going to be how do you distribute surpluses. That's not going to be the issue. The issue is going to be, with the restrictions we have on the whole population, the budget for the whole population will go up 3.4, no more than 3.4% per person per year. With changes in the healthcare system, that's going to be a very difficult constraint. And the only way we're going to be successful in making that constraint, which will shake down to how many CCOs we have in the state, is the ability to transform the way we deliver care in very systematic ways. If you're dealing with 60 clinics, you may not be able to put together a model that transforms the way healthcare is delivered on the ground. And we can peck at it, we can have gym classes, and we can do low-hanging fruit getting people out of the emergency room. But the real question is, what are you going to do when it hits the fan? Mm-hmm. And how are you going to be prepared at that point to be doing things differently than you're doing it now? Because the way we're doing it now will not succeed over time.
Yeah. So first of all, I don't want to dismiss the idea of capturing and reinvesting shared savings, because I agree with you. It's
great.
Not
great. You get surpluses. That's wonderful.
No, I'm talking about shared savings because it incents our providers to be more efficient and to help us find those savings when we're reinvesting them back. So I hear what you're saying, and I also don't want to completely dismiss it. Secondly, though, to your question of when it hits the fan, the current provider system that we have right now, I don't know that everyone's going to come along on the transformation agenda, right? That may shake out in a different fashion at some point in the future, and we have to let those providers determine where they want to be as their own profession changes underneath them. I do think, though, that the opportunity to have this period of rapid-fire innovation is lifting up and identifying new models that we are going to have significant impact on. The biggest thing that I've learned that's driving costs are really these issues of trauma, post-traumatic stress, and anxiety. And we have never addressed those adequately within our medical system, I would say. And they are, when we look at our data, they are what are driving all the costs that we see that are inappropriate. We determine inadequate. And if we can take the models around how we do integration that had to start in pilot transformative efforts and embed those into our systems, and we're small enough as a county, we absolutely can do that. That's where we're going to see significant change.
Do you think leaving the mental health services to the county is the way to get that transformation?
I don't think that the structure of where that sits is as significant as the way the work is done and the referrals and the co-services are delivered.
Do you think the counties can do that work?
I think our county has stepped up in a significant way. I don't think it's ever good to have everything invested in just one institution, so we need to diversify that. But I think they have stepped up.
You guys are a tough group.
We need to be back on the floor. So I'm going to move us in. into recess. We'll recess until 4 o'clock. At 4 o'clock, we're going to be next door in hearing room D with David.
Thank you for the time and the questions. I really appreciate
Thank you for coming.
That's your rules.
Thank you.
Hearing room David. D David. Right
next door.
At 4 o'clock.
And there'll be a sign.
Thank you guys so much for coming up. We really appreciate the work.
Yeah, thank you.
It's great to hear these reports.
Hard questions are good for us.
Thank you for all the hard work.
We are in recess. We are in recess.